Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts. Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's not in the way you've been treating my friends. It's not in the way that you stay to the end. It's not in the way you look or the things that you say that you do. Or the lie.
Welcome back. A few minutes past 4 p.m. DGS 104.1 FM KMOX. Gorgeous day out there. Little hot for my taste, but I'm sure most people disagree. They're out Forest Park or sitting on a patio having a drink, and no one's working but us.
Yeah, you know, and we're indoors.
In my mind, they're all out there having the time of their lives.
Everybody's partying. Mm-hmm. Everybody.
Stairway to Kevin?
Sure. I got a few things that I've been looking to run
Do
through.
Do them all. But-
well, we'll see. I mean, I don't know that there's time.
Bench can't go to 440.
I don't. I mean, I can give you. If anybody can, you know, it's me.
Okay, we're going home.
All right, so I was thinking about this last night. I don't remember what started it. It might have just been like, I think I was thinking about, because my brother's going to come in for his 50th birthday. He's already 50, but like we're gonna celebrate it in a few weeks.
Do we get to meet him?
Yeah, I'll bring him in and.
Do we get to get hypnotized?
He will hypnotize. He does that on the radio. Like, he literally does that for a living. He like appears
Let's
on morning stations
it.
In Atlanta. But if you guys want to bring him in and have him make fun
Very
of me, that's
so.
Great. Yeah, he'll come
yeah.
in.
Extremely.
He will enjoy it, and he will definitely try to hypnotize somebody.
Yeah. I'll do it.
But that got me thinking about a thing. Like, all right, because I was thinking of 50. He's 3 years younger than me. He turned 50. I'm 53. And I was like, all right, so what percentage of all humans that have ever lived made it to the age of 50? Do you guys have an idea?
Less than half.
I'll say right at half.
Okay. It's like 20%.
Whoa.
I was going to say 1%.
So like 20% of all human beings that have ever lived on Earth made it to the age of 50. Now, and most of the problem is like prehistoric, right? Because back then it was like, you had a 50% chance of dying as an infant, right?
Yeah.
So it was quite a bit more challenging back then. But what's interesting is, think about it. In looking this stuff up, and I did, by the way, I used ChatGPT, and then I kind of double-checked it, like, mm-hmm. searching, because I wanted to see it. It did pretty well.
Yeah.
It did pretty well. How many humans do you think have ever lived on the planet?
100 billion.
70 billion.
35 billion.
It's between 117 and 120 billion people have lived. So again, of that, only 20 to 25% have ever made it to the age of 50, which is, and again, when we think about the rapid change, right, that low number, so this was the breakdown that it gave me. So essentially, you have the whole prehistoric era when it was probably like 15% of people would ever get to that age, maybe 10% would ever get to that age. And then you get into like ancient.
Did someone just hear Cartman?
I heard a voice, but it wasn't. Yeah,
I heard something. I don't know what that was. Yeah.
Dave Murray.
Yeah, he's probably pranking us.
Punking us.
So you get into the ancient civilizations like Egypt and Rome, it might have been like 25%, and it was, and this is how it was defined: 20 to 25% if they survive childhood. So if you made it to 12 or 13, your chances of getting to 50 were 1 in 4. Like, it was that crazy. So what we're talking about, this time where people are living to 50 regularly, is really only the last 200 years.
Yeah.
And wow, really, it's mostly the last 50 to, you know, 100 maybe, right? I mean, like, mm-hmm, life expectancies when we were kids, Dave, were probably, what, like 7, 8, 9 years younger than they are now?
Probably.
So it continues to increase rapidly.
You know, the thing is, and I don't mean to steal your thing here,
no,
but I'm probably wrong about this, but my feeling was that when I was a kid, people were dying of old age in their 70s.
Yes.
Of,
yeah,
old age related things.
And it still happens, but not like that.
Yeah.
And what, there are two parts of it that were stunning to me. It was just like, number one, we always talk about, and because it feels like sometimes this is the worst ever time, right? Because you're seeing all these terrible things. I think we're exposed to terrible things on a daily basis. Although, think about how terrible life must have been when half of kids were dying.
Sure.
While they were kids, right? Like, that would have been every day all around you. It would, yeah, have been in your village, in your, where you lived. It would have been happening all the time. But I wonder if it was just kind of accepted. Like, this is
so.
It. This is the way it is. I mean, you
and
know.
And then when my mom was young, and stories about the generation before her, I mean, people just had a lot of kids because you would lose one or two.
Right.
You know, they did in their family.
Right. And I think that what's fun is balancing it. Like, I don't know if this is this. I don't want this to sound dark, but this is kind of where I was thinking about it last night, was life's always kind of been terrible. But, like, it's not always terrible, but it is terrible. You know what I mean? I don't know what percentage of life is terrible, but the terrible will always be there, right? Some versions, and it'll be different versions of it. So what we get now is this immersive terrible, where problems on the other side of the world that would not have been your problem 200 years ago because you would have never known about it are now in your head.
Well,
but
even problems in your neighborhood,
sure,
weren't your problem.
Right, exactly right. Or even one state away. I mean, it was, yeah, like, in previous times, if you were in South Dakota and something bad was happening in Wisconsin, you would never have known about it. So, but you would have also had more direct contact with terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Loss of limbs, loss of health, death, things along those lines. I would definitely take now over that.
Yeah.
I would take the exposure to all the bad things and the knowledge that all these terrible things are happening versus having to have it really immediately hit you every time. I mean, for every person.
If it were quantifiable, if there was a way to know it, do you guys feel that most lives have an average amount of grief? I guess, is it a bell curve? Do you think that most of us are bunched up in the middle with about the same amount of grief?
Sure, yeah.
And then you got people on the left side who've just had a terrible go of it.
Yeah.
And then some of these people, like, I always think to myself, like, who has lived the easiest, best life? Probably some rancher in the 1800s in Wyoming who just married his high school sweetheart, had a bunch of kids who loved him.
They all made it.
He had good success with money, lived to be 90 years old. Like, then you got those people.
Yeah, I would have to agree. It has to be some kind of curve like that. But I would think that there is probably what we would consider a common amount of bad or tragedy or grief or however you put it. I mean, because, you know, if you live long enough, you're going to see bad things. I mean, you just are, right? You're going to see friends and family members die. You're going to live that if you live long enough. So there's probably that normal range. And then there are probably the lucky ones that maybe you have small families and everybody lives a long time. And, you know, you don't have any tragedies where the younger generation dies before somebody in the older generation. Like, I'm sure that exists, but it probably would be relatively uncommon, and probably relatively uncommon for the people that are just nonstop tragedy.
So for religious people, having been one in my past, the answer was, and still is for the most part from what I can tell, that life is a test and it's not supposed to be perfect. And the world is fallen because of Adam and Eve, and because we all would have made the same decisions, and therefore we are in charge of the world and the devil's in charge of the world, and that's why it's wicked. So from a non-religious standpoint, I don't mean that you know there's no God. I just mean that that's not your go-to. How do you suss out and make sense of a life that for most people is fairly full of grief?
I don't know that there is any sense to be made of it. It just is. Right? I don't know, that sounds really ridiculous.
No.
But I mean, like, it should be the expectation. Like, you know it's going to be, you just don't know how much. You don't know if you're going to be on the lucky end of the curve or on the tough end of the curve.
Like Buddhism that says life is suffering.
Right.
That's what it is.
To a degree it is, but it's more than that, right? I mean, it's a lot more than that. If we suffered as much as we, again, this is all, every person's experience is different. And that goes through, that accounts for things like anxiety, depression, right? Everybody's experience is different. But if the average person suffered as much as they experienced joy, I'm not sure things would be what they are.
I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think the good wildly outweighs the bad for the, again, on average, not for everybody. Because again, if you're severely depressed, that's not going to feel that way. And that doesn't, I'm not trying to say that that's right or wrong. I'm just saying, I understand that there are 8 billion people and there are 8 billion experiences of the world. But if you average them all out, it probably has to be, I would think, a lot more of the joys of, even if it's the simple ones, just, oh, that was a good meal or whatever, compared to, you know, the awfulness of any tragedy. I don't know that that's a fact. It just seems that would be.
For example, we were talking a couple of segments ago that in the last couple of weeks, I went to Brasserie by Niche, saw my friend Gerard Kraft, had a lovely French meal. Probably a pretty low percentage of people who ever had a meal like that. Just take out the modern times. And
right.
That's pretty much everybody.
Low percentage of humans that have ever existed is a good way to look at that, because most people would, most people in, what, before, the, what, I don't know, what, the last 80 years? You would never have had French food. You wouldn't even leave your
restaurant.
Right, yeah. I mean, you would never have known that. And by the way, this chart is great, Dave. But 1964, what do you think the average life expectancy was of people in the Americas?
77.
1964, it was 61.9 years.
Yikes!
Whoa.
And now, it's 77.3, 78, something. It's probably more like 78 now, because that was...
it's a big jump in my lifetime.
That's what I'm saying. That's a one-third increase in your lifetime.
Mm-hmm. I'll take credit for that.
Or close to it. Anyway, that's probably 29, 30%. That's crazy. And I guess the whole, as I started thinking, I'm like, man, so most of time was not that. Most of time was you're dead by the time you're 50. That most of time. So if it goes, this goes back to the Americas in let's do this, 1900. What do you think the average lifespan in the Americas was?
55.
41.
Whoa.
Now, that isn't just the United States of America, right? U.S., Canada, South America, Central America. But, you know, the longest lifespan in 1900 worldwide was in Oceania, which I guess is, what is that? Is that like Australia and whatever? That region of the world, it was 47.6. That was the longest average lifespan 125 years ago.
Which is one human lifespan.
Right. And then when you think back to like 1800... The average lifespan in Europe was 33 years, and in the world it was 28.5. That's 200, just a little more than 200 years ago. And in that time, that's quadrupled
so
almost.
So think about that. Like, we talked about the founding fathers, a lot of them were 19 years old, 22 years old.
They were middle-aged.
So what what was it like to be 14?
You were basically like what a 19 or 20-year-old would be now, right? Because at 14, you were probably getting married.
You're halfway through your life.
Or close to it, right? That's crazy. That's just really crazy. I mean, again, I know that there were plenty of people like, you know, Benjamin Franklin, all those people, they lived to be older. It just meant that a lot of the others died super young, probably from disease.
Yeah.
And certainly from things like war or some kind of violence. But that's that's just crazy.
Wake up in the morning, see your eyes.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Welcome back, 425 DGS. The apropos what we just talked about, if it fits here, do it, because I need to know why my boy JC is in Memphis and Barrero, correct?
Yeah.
Who I liked in spring training and has more time in the majors than JC.
Yeah.
Was that a one-for-one trade?
Essentially, yeah. I mean, they sent JC down because they don't think they're going to be able to find enough regular playing time for him.
Okay.
There's a good debate that could be had about that, because maybe you should, because he's performed well, right? Maybe you should be robbing from some other players to give it to him. But right now, they don't think that they're going to manage that. And I understand it. They already had 10 guys for 9 spots. Now it would be 11 for 9 spots, you know, guys that you want to see regular at-bats from. I understand it, but I think there's a good argument for keeping him and saying, find a way, because he's good and he's been helping you. But he's going down just because they want him to play. Because if they do need him, for example, if they need him to step in for Mason Wynn again, where Wynn has more back problems or whatever, you want him having, you know, been playing every day, you know, getting reps, especially at that position. But it's a tough call. I mean, I think Bernie made a couple of good points on that last week. Like, you know, if this guy can help you, find a way to get him in. Give other guys a day off a week, and now you can find extra room for him.
So do you think Barrero is up mostly because he also plays outfield, or because they're better with him sitting the bench than
JC? Yeah, the number one, they're comfortable with him not playing, right? If he's not a quote-unquote prospect. He's 27. He used to be a top prospect for the Reds, by the way. He was their number one prospect not that long ago.
What happened?
Just he swings and misses too much. It really is that simple. He's got all the talent. He's a decent shortstop. He's a pretty good center fielder. I mean, he's been playing third, short, and center for Memphis. He's been killing it in Memphis, by the way. He's got like a 9-game hitting streak. He's been hit for power. He's got good speed. He's just, in the major leagues, he's had a hard time making contact. Swings and misses, strikes out too much, which, you know, is a hard thing to fix. But you're more comfortable with him being a true bench guy. So he gives you defense for the outfield off the bench. He gives you defense at shortstop off the bench. And maybe gives you a little bit of pop too, but I got to believe the plan is that he's not going to play a whole lot.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And now I know.
Yep. Now you do. And I know it's not a lot of disagreement from Cardinals fans, and it's fair. It's a fair disagreement. I mean, you look at what Sejacy did when he played, he put up numbers, he hit. And you know, since Mason Wynn came back though, I think he only has 6 at bats.
Yeah.
And they just don't want it to be that. They could fix that themselves and make it happen, but they clearly have a different plan.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow. A real person.
Yep. I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow. I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
Hmm.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something...
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and get up to 50% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now. And what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.